one of the most pervasive areas of halacha and Hilchos Shabbos in terms of the extent of its applications, and also one of the most complex in terms of the multitude of its details, is the area of Hilchos Moksa. The area of halacha of objects that one may not handle, one may not move, most properly defined, on Shabbos. Now, this year is not going to be an overview of Hilchos Moksa. Instead, we're going to try to discuss the halachos of muksa in the following situation, or the following type of situation. When one has muksa in his hand already, one already picked up muksa, one already holding muksa, then what is one supposed to do? In order to do this, we're going to have to give a little bit of background to some of the different areas of muksa, but it's not necessarily meant to be an extensive or exhaustive discussion of the topic. The first source to discuss here is the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, the Gemara quotes the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak, whom we don't pass in like. Kishem she'ein nosnim, most of them don't pass in like, rather. Kishem she'ein nosnim kli tachas tarnagolos l'kabel beitzasa, kach and kofim alev kli b'shvil shalot tushar. Rabbi Yitzchak holds that just like one is not permitted to put a kli under an egg, to catch an egg that's born on Shabbos, an egg that's born on Shabbos is a form of muksa. It's what's known as nola. Something that's born on Shabbos is muksa. So if it is prohibited for various reasons to put something underneath the egg to catch it when coming out of the chicken. The Mark talks about the concept of bittul kli me'echano, of making a kli useless by dint of the fact that now it's stuck there because it's holding a dvar muksa. So if Yitzchak comes along and he says, just like that's prohibited, it's also prohibited to take a kli, take some sort of utensil, to cover the muksa, not to put it underneath the muksa, but to put it over the muksa to cover it in order to protect it. If the egg's lying on the table, you want to make sure that no one smashes it or it doesn't roll off, so you take a pot and cover it. So this pot is not muksa at all, but the egg is. So Rabbi Yitzchak holds it's prohibited to take the pot to cover the egg. Why? Because Savar ain't klinital el l'davar nitol b'shabbos. Rabbi Yitzchak has a shita that it is prohibited to carry or to move anything, any kli whatsoever, for the purposes of a dvar muksa. In other words, not only is it asur, is prohibited to move muksa, it's prohibited to move anything for the benefit of that which is muksa. That's Rabbi Yitzchak's sheet. Again, this is Rabbi Yitzchak's sheet per se, we don't pass the light. Meisei kohani tifta, you have to look at the Gemara in context to see what that's referring to. The Gemara says there's a whole list of writings that sound not like that. Vishani b'tzarach l'mkoma. And the Gemara answers that what we're talking about is tzarach l'mkoma. What does that mean? So I neglected to put the Rashi down the Ma'ar Makomas, but I'm focusing up on the internet. But Rashi there explains that Rashi tells you what the Gemara is talking about. Rashi says what the Gemara is saying is like this: that even though Rabbi Yitzchak holds that it's usher to move a dvar muksa for purposes of a davar she'eino nifel, if one picked up the kli anyway because you needed its place, for instance, you have your pot that's sitting on the countertop and you need to clear room on the countertop to put out the food. The pot's in the way. So you picked up the pot, or the, so the pot's out of the, leave the pot's away for, out of discussion for a second. You picked up the plate, whatever it may be. You took it off the countertop. Why? Why is it in your hand? Why did you initially pick it up? Because you needed the space. That's perfectly permissible. Once you have it in your hand, you can do whatever you want with it, including putting it down to cover the egg. Even though that would have been prohibited, that's a tiltul ha'asur, to originally pick up the plate for that purpose would have been asur, but once you have it in your hand, it's permissible to continue moving it for that purpose. That's the Gemara. So here we have the introduction to this idea that perhaps, even though you're moving it more, it may be permissible to move something that is already, you're already holding for a purpose that you otherwise would not have been able to move. Tosfos and Beis, Daf Gimel Beis, and other Rishayim as well, say the following chiddush based on this Gemara. The Gemara Beis is really quoting the same brisa as in the Gemara in Shabbos. And the first half of the Tosfos, he quotes the Rashi refers to the Gemara in Shabbos. And if you look at the second line in the sheet in the Tosfos, Umikan Peskim, Yehud Yekaimelon, the Darvish of Lachto the Isser Osir. Tosfos is discussing the following issue. This is, I need to mention one thing by way of introduction. When it comes to muksa, there are many types of muksa, but there are two classes of muksa, in terms of two areas of halacha, two areas of of two sets of rules for different types of moksa. General hilchos moksa are asur betilpul. Things that generally are considered moksa, whatever form they are asur to move, period. No matter what. No matter why you need to do it, no matter what you're using it for, doesn't matter, it's asur to move. Then there's something known as a kli shamachal iser. A kli shamachal iser is a kli, it's a utensil. It's something that's not muksa in the classic sense. Muksa in the classic sense is something that's useless for Shabbos. Useless, a piece of, in the most classic sense of muksa, dirt, rocks, twigs, money is also considered muksa. Money's not a kli. Money's junk. I mean, from the perspective of muksa, money's a piece of junk. It's not something that's a kli, a food, or a kli, a utensil. It's just a thing. So something like that is muksa. But a kli, something that is objectively considered useful, it's a utensil, is not muksa. However, if the primary purpose of this kli is for something that's prohibited on Shabbos, then that's what's known as a kli shamachal iser. For instance, a pen. A pen is a kli, it's a utensil. It's makabel tumah in Hilchos Teilim. But primarily, a pen is used for what? For writing. So a pen is what's known as a kli shamachal iser. You might occasionally use a pen for something else. You might use a pen as a bookmark, like in the Sefer over here. But primarily, pens are used for writing. So a pen is also prohibited to be used on, to be handled, rather, on Shabbos. But it's called a kli shamachal iser, not muksa. What's the difference? The difference is that a kli shamachal iser is mutter for two purposes, tzarech gufo and tzarech makoma. That if I want to use this pen for itself, I found something to do with it on Shabbos, I want to use it as a bookmark. I am permitted to take the pen and use it as a bookmark. I'm also permitted to move the pen if it's in my way. The pen's lying, I have a whole pack of pens strewn on my desk. I want to use my desk. I can't sit and learn on my desk without putting the pens there. So I'm about to move the pens out of the way so I can use the desk. That's what's known as tzarech makomo. I need the space. So again, the two types of cases where it's permissible to move a kli shamachal iser are tzarech gufo and tzarech makomo. When may one not move kli shamachal iser for any other purpose, but classically that would be if you wanted to save the pen. If you have a pen that, or I don't know how often you want to use the pen, but the pen's going to get ruined, the pen's going to get taken by your kids, or whatever it may be, and you want to make sure the pen doesn't get taken, then you can't move it out of the way. Because that's not for the purpose of using the pen on Shabbos, or for the purpose of the place in which the pen sits. Regular muksa, again, doesn't have these leniencies. The regular muksa, it's not permissible to move it to the tzarech gufo or the tzarech makom. So Tosfos says like this. Let's say I picked up my pen because it was on my desk and it was in my way. So that's permissible. I picked up a pot that's used to cook with primarily, a regular pot. I picked up my frying pan that's used primarily for frying. And it's on my counter, it's in my way, so I took it out of the way. So what am I supposed to do with it now? Do I have to drop it? After all, now it's fine. Now I can drop it on the floor. It's not going to be in anyone's way. Or I can drop it with the first place I find it's not in anyone's way. Do I have to drop it? So Tosfos says, Mikan poskim, the hazek haimon, the davar shem lachol, iser, usr, eino ela dafka, sheino tzorach kufo, tzorach makom. Okay, well, tzorach kufo, tzorach makom, moshari. Tosfos says even this gemara, that this halacha, that kli shamach iser, is prohibited betilpul, prohibited for one to move it. It's only if it's not for the purpose of the use of the kli, or for the purpose of the place of the kli. If, however, it's for the purpose of the use of the kli itself, or for the place of the kli, it's permissible. In his sila talkal b'shvil shetzarach l'gufa olimakomo, if one began handling it for those purposes, mutar l'holicho afilu b'chadru im yirtza, then once one has it in his hand, he can take it wherever he wants in his room. He can put it away, he can put it back in the drawer, he can put it back where it belongs, even if there are closer places he could leave it somewhere else, he could leave it at the corner of the desk, and it won't be in anyone's way, but once he has it in his hand, he can go put it back in the drawer where it normally belongs. Why is it to be seen from this Gemara? The Chazina Hachad, Ho, Vetzorach Makomo, Ola Gufa Kli, Kufay Ola Beitza. Because we see from this Sugya that according to Rabbi Yitzchak, who normally prohibits moving any Kalim for purpose of protecting anything that's Muksa, once you picked it up for a legitimate purpose, for a purpose that's permissible, he then allows you to keep moving it. So same thing is true by Kli Shamachal Iser. Once you pick it up for a permissible purpose, then you can keep moving it and keep handling it even past the point where that purpose exists. This is the sign of Pesach.
Why can't you do that? Once you're taking it off the desk, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's clear. Do you think at that point the closest position to be open? Basically, after that, it's still moving books.
Max, that's a good question. That's a good question. So, good question. We're going to try to discuss the extent of the application, which may shed a little bit light on it. So we'll hold off on that for a second. At the end, I'm not sure if I'll fully answer that question, but depending on the application, that may be part of the...
Basically, the principle is not just the...
Right, that's closest finish. Right, exactly. That extends it beyond that. Again, presumably, to get back to what Ellie said, just made a touch on what I said just briefly, presumably, what it sounds like we're saying, we'll see if that's really true, is that the Isser of Tilkul Muksa is defined as beginning to be involved with the Muksa, beginning a process of handling the Muksa. Once you're already in the middle of handling it, that's not Usser. But you're right, it's a Chiddush, because presumably I would say about Tilkul Muksa after that point also. There is an Or Sameach that has an interesting suggestion, but maybe if we have time to mention the end, I'll mention, otherwise we can talk about it afterwards. It's an interesting Chiddush. But the question is, what's the extent of this hula? As I just pointed out, we see from Tosfos that they're extending it beyond Rav Yitzchak's case to any case of klisha matal iser. However, klisha matal iser has two things, or rather, this case of klisha matal iser has two aspects that don't always apply in every case of muksa, or for that matter, in every case of klisha matal iser. First of all, we pointed out klisha matal iser has different halachas than muksa. Or some different halacha for muksa. Regular muksa, if it has a dollar bill, I can't carry it. L'tzarach gufo, l'tzarach makomo. If money's strewn on my desk, I have to leave it there. If I want to use my dollar as a bookmark, I can't. So, can one extrapolate from klisha matal iser to muksa? That's one issue. And the other issue is that this is a case where the klisha matal iser was picked up permissibly. Let's say it wasn't picked up permissibly. Let's say you picked up your klisha matal iser because you wanted to get, you picked up your pen because you wanted to get, you don't want your kids to ruin it. Which is not allowed. But you did it without realizing. And then you realize, that's in your hand, you realize, oh, wait a minute, I shouldn't have done that. Now what can you do? Now do you have to drop it? Or now, as we say, once it's in your hand, you can keep moving it because the whole iser is only to begin the process. Once it's in your hand, there's no iser anymore. What you did, for Fallon, but for now on, it's personal. Those are questions which that brings him debate. The Magen Avraham says like this. Magen Avraham is the most makel of the Goli HaPoskim on this issue. It's also on the sheet. The Magen Avraham is in the beginning of Simen Shin Ches, where the Shulchan Aruch mentions this halacha. The Shulchan Aruch brings down the halacha that klisha makal iser, once you pick it up with tzarach gufo or tzarach makomo, you can put it down wherever you want. Says the Magen Avraham, why is that true? The kinyan should be yodo rasha el kalzal yotzer. Once in your hands, you can keep moving it. The nireli, the apilu shacha unetolo biyodo rasha el kalzal yotzer. I am not sure if I'm a simmer love sifritics. Says the Magen Avraham that it seems to him that this halach applies not only if you legitimately, permissibly began carrying the klisha matal iser, began carrying your pot, your screwdriver, your pen, whatever it may be. But even if you didn't do it permissibly, you did it shalom b'hazer, not l'tzarach gufo, not l'tzarach makomo. But you did it accidentally, you forgot, you picked it up, and now it's in your hand, you realize, oh, I'm not supposed to have this in my hand. Magen Avraham says, doesn't matter, once in your hand, you can carry it.
As opposed to somebody who can see it, knows it's us to pick it up.
But if he did it amazing, Magen Avraham doesn't discuss, it could be there, we wouldn't allow it just because of some sort of a knas of sorts. It's not clear. He doesn't discuss that. Maybe he just doesn't want to mention that because why should we assume anyone's going to do this if we made it? So he has to give an example. He gives an example of someone who forget. That's probably, according to the Magen Avraham, as we'll see in a minute, the Magen Avraham's rationale, presumably it should have applied to Mazid also. I think some Afrinim say that the Mazid, we're not making, but that's because it's more like a Svar that we don't want to, if someone did Mazid, and did Tshuva, we wouldn't be making. But that's more of a knas type of sort, I think. So the Magen Avraham says, it's mutter even if he, in other words, according to the Magen Avraham, it's permissible even if he did, to continue carrying, even if he didn't have the heter originally to pick it up. And what the Ram said at the end, look at Reish Shem Avav Sifu Beis. What's Reish Shem Avav Sifu Beis? So that's the Ramah, that's the next source on the sheet. The Ramah discusses the following case. Let's say someone, can happen all the time, someone realizes he has money in his pocket on Shabbos. The Ramah is talking about a pocket, the Ramah is talking about a money belt that he used to have in those days. He's carrying his money belt, and he realizes he forgot to take off his belt, forgot to take off the money from the belt, or how the things look exactly, and it's on Shabbos, he realizes he forgot to take it off before Shabbos. So now he's walking around carrying money on Shabbos. So the Ramah says, Mishashachat kisa olav b'Shabbos, imu b'beisu yachol leilach imo l'cheder l'hatr chaguro v'lipo sham hatzniyo. The Ramah says, and the Ramah says, excuse me, that if you're in a place where there's an Eruv, you can keep walking with your money belt until you get to your room, until you get to a safe place, and then you'll take off the belt, if the money falls there, and the money will be safe. You know, the person's concerned, if he just takes off his, the money drop in the middle of the public place, in the middle of shul, wherever it may be, so then he won't see the money after Shabbos, or wherever he drops it. So if he's concerned about that, he can keep walking with the muksa money into his private place and then take it off. Why? So the Magen Avraham says on that Ramah, the same thing he says in Shin Ches, which he refers to. That because this is the principle of once you've begun carrying money, carrying muksa, you can continue handling it until you put it down. The Magen Avraham puts the two halachas together. Now, there's a jump here. We're talking about money. Money is muksa. Money is not a klisha machalis. But the Magen Avraham seems to have this very general approach to this issue. The Magen Avraham thinks that once muksa of any sort is in your hand, there is no isser to move it. The isser of handling muksa, he thinks the Ramah believes this, because he's explaining the Ramah, he thinks Pashta the Ramah means this. The prohibition of handling muksa is to pick up muksa, or at least begin the process of moving muksa. Once you've already begun moving it, there's no prohibition anymore to keep moving the muksa. Whether it be muksa, whether it be klisha matzal iser, whether it was permissible to have picked up in the first place, or whether it wasn't permissible to pick up in the first place, you just forgot. It's still muksa once you have it in your hand. This is the shita of the Magen Avraham. So with achana, there's no iser of achana, it's clear from the Gemara, there's no iser of achana when you're afraid something will be lost. The basic rule of achana is that something you could just as easily do after Shabbos, you can't do on Shabbos. And because you're just trying to save time. Then you're trying to save time after Shabbos. It's going to be inconvenient doing it after Shabbos, but if something is going to, your faith is going to get ruined, or lost, or whatever it may be, if you don't do it on Shabbos, then that's mukta.
But so there's a pretty good part. Going an extra 5,000 in the house to put the pot away, just because it'll save you time after Shabbos, might be a chana problem. Whereas you could just easily put it down on the bench,
okay, I don't know how much, you have to figure out exactly to define how much effort is defined as havana. I mean, you haven't heard it anyway. So it's a question of putting it down here, we're taking 3 steps and putting it down there. And chanan, maybe it required you to walk a few miles, it might be havana. But it also could be that we're talking about it also might be some cases where it's important for the safety of the pot where you put it down, which would not be a basis of hetzer for carrying in the first place. But once you have it in your hand, it will be mukta. Now, this is the opinion of the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham said the same thing in another case. And this leads into source number 5. One of the areas where the system brings this up, where it comes up regularly, I don't know how often it happens, but where it comes up on a, I guess, not so infrequent basis, is the halacha of Mila B'Shabbos, situation of Mila B'Shabbos. An Ismail Shalmila is what's known as Muksa Masa Sasarakis, or at least it used to be. I've heard recently from Gary Smolin that nowadays they use some Ismail, they're very easy to get, and they're almost almost disposable, and they have many of them. But in the, classically, the mold of knife was something that was very delicate. He had one special silver knife, and he took very good care of it, and didn't let anyone play with it, didn't use it for anything else, kept it aside just for Mila. Like a Shalmila knife. Type of situation. So the halacha is that's what's known as muksa machatz b'sarakis, meaning that anything that whose only purpose on Shabbos is something that's usher, and the owner would be the owner is machbe, the owner is very careful not to use it for anything else. Not like my pen. My pen, so I use it for writing, but if I need it for something else, I use it for something else too. But my meal knife, I would never use it to chop my vegetables, but I didn't have a knife. Why? Because it's too valuable, and I'm afraid it's going to get nicked or ruined. So that's what's known as muksa masas to sarang kids. Something like that is full-fledged muksa, because it has absolutely no purpose on Shabbos. It's the only purpose it's meant to be used for, you can't do on Shabbos, and nothing else would you ever use it for. So that's what's called muksa masas to sarang kids. So the question is like this. What happens when a male baby's born on Shabbos, there's a bris b'tzman, yom hashmini on Shabbos, the mole does the bris. The mole is allowed to use the knife for the bris. He's supposed to do the bris on Shabbos. Now, the mole's bris is over. He doesn't have any more bris later that night. He has his knife in his hand. He looks up. At this point. So what's he supposed to do with it? So the Ramah says, in Siman Reish Lamed Vav, that you can still handle it. You can still put it away. Now, in the particular case of Mila, there are other issues and other bases of leniency besides the topic that we're discussing of the continuation of carrying muksa wells in your hand. It could be that with mila, it's mutter to carry even after you put it down for one of various reasons. That's not the topic of discussion now. But the Magen Avraham says in Simon Shin Yin Aleph Narachayim that the halakha is the following. Once you put the knife down, you can't carry it anymore. But as long as the knife in his hand, you can put it away wherever you want, put it away in a nice safe place. Why is that? After all, this is really muksa. This is not klisha machta lisser anymore. This is a form of regular full-fledged muksa, known as muksa machta sisar v'kis. But again, the Magen Avraham is the shita, so the Magen Avraham is consistent. And he believes that once muksa is in your hand, you can do whatever you want. But this leads us to those achronim who disagree with the Magen Avraham. And I think if you look carefully, you'll see that there are really three different approaches in achronim who disagree with the Magen Avraham and are more machmir with the Magen Avraham, and their nafkaminas, their differences in halacha between different approaches. The Gra actually comments this in two places, and doesn't say the same thing in each place. But one approach, the most fundamental approach, I think, is the Gra in Yerideya. The Gra in Yerideya disagrees with the Ramah, disagrees with the Magen Avraham, the Taz. The Gra is of the opinion, following that of the Ma'aril, that the earlier Achronim quote, that when the Moral finishes the Mila, he has to drop the knife. Stop it. Now, if it's dangerous, that's a different situation, different story. But assuming it's not dangerous to anyone, you have to drop the knife. Why? Because muksa. Once he finishes it, the Ismail Shamila is muksa, he must drop it. And the Gra deals with the question of why is this different than what we know from Klisha Machta Lissa? And he says that it only applies to Klisha Machta Lissa. It doesn't apply to regular muksa. But he explains. He doesn't just say because Klisha Machta Lissa is more lenient, and therefore, a muksa, we don't have any source to apply this leniency to muksa also. Because Klisha Machta Lissa has leniency that muksa doesn't have. No. He says that the reason for the distinction is the following. To summarize, to paraphrase. That there's another halakha that people don't generally know. A Klisha Machta Lahet. Let's say a fork, a spoon. A regular kli that's perfect, that whose use on Shabbos is perfectly permissible. So you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos. It says in Shulchan Aruch, based on the Magen Mishnah, this is simple reading of the Gemara and the Gemara called Akelim, that even a Klisha Machta Lahetzer is not permissible to be handled for absolutely no reason. You can handle it to protect it for a reason, but not for no reason. The Shef likes to point out that the Rav pointed out that this is, the Shabur may not agree with this particular application of it, but the Rav pointed out that the people who sit at the table and play with their, just play with the forks or the silverware or the cups or whatever's in front of them, aimlessly, so that's a violation of this halacha. Now, according to the Shabur, it doesn't apply to forks and cups, but it could apply to anything else that's a collision, apply to a suit, to a coat, that if you just aimlessly play, move around your coat for no particular reason, that would be a violation of this halacha, moving a klisha machta lahetzer for no reason. So the Gra basically says like this, or at least the way I understand the Gra. The Gra is saying that klisha machta lahetzer is not muksa at all. It's entirely different than muksa. It's not just a more lenient form of muksa. It's an entirely different category. What? In what way? Certain things are mukhs. What does that mean? That these objects, b'chetzer, are the type of things that are set aside on Shabbos, that are prohibited until these things are the types of things that the Chazal say not let a handle on Shabbos. Then there's everything else. Everything else is not offered to handle on Shabbos, fundamentally. But there's this other prohibition that you're not allowed to move things around Shavuot Torah Klal. That you're not allowed to handle things purposely on Shabbos. It has nothing to do with anything. Nothing to do with whether the Chafetz is Mokhtar or not Mokhtar. The Chafetz is not Mokhtar, but you're still not allowed to handle it aimlessly on Shabbos. So the Gra seems to understand that the din that Kli Shalachta L'Isser is Mutter L'Tarach Kufa L'Tarach Mokhomo shows that it's really not Mokhtar at all. Why is it Usser to use it for any other purpose? Because then it becomes purposeless. In other words, again, Kli Shalachta L'Hetter. I have something, I have a coat. So let's say the coat's going to get ruined. If I don't move it on Shabbos. So I'm allowed to move it. Why? Because since it's the type of thing I could use on Shabbos, so even though I'm not using it right now, who knows, I may need to use it later on Shabbos. Or at least in theory it could be used on Shabbos. So that's not considered Shalom Zorach Klal. But a Kli Shamlachto L'Isser, if I'm using it to protect it, since I can't use it on Shabbos anyway, that's Shalom Zorach Klal. The only thing that's not Shalom Zorach Klal on that Kli Shamlachto L'Isser is if I'm using it to use, which is an abnormal situation, or I'm using it because it's in the way, or for some other reason it's blocking me. But if I'm just using it for handling it, moving it for itself, since this is the type of thing that I don't use on Shabbos, that's considered Shalom Torah Klal. But fundamentally, it's not Muksa. Fundamentally, the fact that it's also to handle it, Shalom Torah Kufa Mekomo, is because that's part of the general halakha of handling things, Shalom Torah Klal. So the Gra says that once it's fundamentally different, then this halakha doesn't apply. Why? So, what I would suggest he means is that when we're talking about the Isser of handling in Shalom Torah Klal, so that Isser only applies to the beginning of a process of handling something. You're not allowed to get involved in handling something purposely. But once you have a purpose in handling it, then you never make such an Isser to finish it. It's a totally different type of Isser. Maybe you try it because once in your hand, we don't consider it Shalom Torah Klal to put it down in a place that you like to put it down. That's the normal thing to do with it. Maybe that's the reason. Or maybe that's just not the Gezer or Isser. But since it's a totally different type of Isser, it's not an Isser Tilkul Stam. It's not just an Isser Tilkul. It's an Isser of using or being metapo with things and metapo and Shalom Torah Klal. That's not included in that Isser. So according to the Gra, the Gra withholds this din does not apply to Muksa at all. Any form of Muksa, not at all. It wouldn't apply to Ismail Shalmila. It wouldn't apply to any other thing, Muksa thing you pick up. It wouldn't apply to the money. Anything that's really Muksa, once it's in your hand, you have to drop. However, according to this Gra, Tadish points out, that he might agree to the Magen Avraham in Shin Ches. When it comes to Kli Shamlachta L'Isser, presumably, it shouldn't matter if you picked it up permissibly, or you picked it up by accident. The bottom line is, when it comes to Kli Shamlachta L'Isser, this is not included in the prohibition. That's what it sounds like from the Gra. This is the Gra's approach to the sermon. Then you have the sheet of the Eben Ha'ozer. It's brought down by the Achroner. Beger talks about it a lot. The Eben Ha'ozer, it's a print in the back of Arachayim, also in Simon Reish Tamach Vav and Arachayim. We have Yerodei Reish Tamach Vav and Arachayim Reish Tamach Vav. So the Eben Ha'ozer basically says something similar to the Gra. He distinguishes between Muksa and Kli Shamlachta L'Isser. However, it sounds like he's doing it for a different reason, and there seems to be, and there's an afkamina that may come out of this. He doesn't say that the distinction is based on the fact that Muksa and Kli Shamlachta L'Isser are two fundamentally different areas of halakha. He says, well, Kli Shamlachta L'Isser is more lenient than Muksa. We know that Kli Shamlachta L'Isser has a kula, Tzarach Kufa, Tzarach Mekomo. Muksa doesn't have that kula. So just like they made a number of kulas, these kulas of Tzarach Kufa, Tzarach Mekomo by Kli Shamlachta L'Isser, they also made another kula of Kli Shamlachta L'Isser. That is, continuing the permissibility of continuing to carry something once it's in your hand. But by Muksa, we don't find they ever made such a leniency. He says, but there is one case of Muksa where there is a heter of Tzarach Mekomo. What's that? Tilkul Menat Tzak. And this is another concept also, just to mention briefly, that Muksa prohibited, it's prohibited for one to handle muksa with their hands directly. How about handling muksa indirectly? How about taking this pen here and pushing the muksa with my pen? Or moving one thing that indirectly pushes away something else that's muksa. So then the basic rule of thumb is that it depends. If it's for the purpose of getting the muksa from place A to place B, it's not allowed. If it's incidental, and the purpose is to get the purpose is to move the davar hamutar, and just in the process of moving davar muksa, the davar muksa moves out of the way. You have in your freezer, you have an ice cream in the back of the freezer, and you have some raw meat in the front of the freezer, which is muksa. So when you pull out the ice cream, it's gonna, there's no way to pull it out without the ice cream or something else pushing the meat out of the way while you do that. So that's okay. Similarly, if you're moving it out of the way because you need the space, that's also okay if you do a min hatzad. If you sweep away something that's muksa because you need the place, that's also permissible. So says the Ebn Ozer that tiltum min hatzad of muksa is mutar l'tzarach makom. Like we just said, if you need a place, you're allowed to tilt muksa min hatzad. So once, says the Ebn Ozer, if you accidentally picked up muksa min hatzad, even not with Tarak Makom, it sounds like. If you picked up, you had some, your money on top of something, and it wasn't a Basas of Avrasa, which is a different category. You forgot there before Shabbos. You left your money on top of something, you forgot there before Shabbos, and for whatever reason, you picked up the whole thing with the money on it, started moving it away, because you want to move the money out of the way, and then you realize you're not going to move the money out of the way. But once in your hand already, he says, you can actually keep carrying it to put the money, until you find the place for the money and drop the money out of the way. The girl, I think, would disagree with that. Because at the end of the day, this is not Krishna Matlisa, this is Muksa. So the fact that the Heter of Tiltum and Atzad, the Tarash Makomo, is fine, but now you're not doing the Tarash Makomo, so there's no such Heter. The Ebn Ozer thinks that the distinction between Krishna Matlisa and Muksa is just based on the fact that Krishna Matlisa has more kulas than Muksa. Not because it's fundamentally different than Muksa. Therefore, if you have a case of Muksa that also has kulas, such as Tiltum and Atzad, then the same, this kula that you can continue moving, and once you have it, still applies. Again, according to Ebn Ozer, I assume he would also agree that when it comes to Klisha Matal Isser, once you picked it up, it's permissible. Even if you picked it up accidentally. And then you have the Gra and Arachai. The Gra in Simon Reish Samach Vav and Arachayim, on the discussion of Ramon and Mavi Ram, the person who forgot his money belt, disagrees and says you have to drop the money right away. And there he gives a different reason than he gives in Eretz. There he says that the only time we have the heter of which allows you to continue moving muksa is when you're allowed to move the muksa in the first place. That really handling muksa or handling klisha matalisa, it sounds like, once it's in your hand, is the same as handling it from the start. It's not allowed. Same as picking it up. It's just that if you were allowed to pick it up, then part of the heter the beginning of handling it, part of the heter of picking it up, is that you can continue carrying it until you find a place to put it down. That's included in the heter of picking it up. But if you did pick it up with the heter, no luck. Therefore, according to this mahala, if you have a klisha machal iser that you picked up accidentally without a heter, you would have to put it down. On the other hand, presumably according to this mahalas, if you had muksa that you really had, it was really permissible to handle, right, such as the Mila case, where it was mutter for you to use it before, on Shabbos, and then became also in the middle when it was in your hand, that's a rare case, then presumably it would be permissible. Now the two bras don't say the same thing, so I'm not sure if the two bras are complementing each other, I mean, he holds both limitations, or the bra has different explanations at different times, in one place, in one year, one explanation, or another explanation. Whether or not the Gra himself holds, those are definitely two legitimate mahalakim in the Achronim, that one that's limited to where the Eschol is the Heter, and one which limited to a case of Klisha Matlisa as opposed to Muksa. Now, which is interesting, yesterday someone asked, said the Shiloh of Muksa, starting carrying Muksa Heter, and then turning Muksa doesn't come up so often. But then, punked yesterday, someone told me on Shabbos and said he thinks he had the shayla. He was in shul Shabbos morning and he realized his watch had stopped. He was in shul Shabbos morning and he realized his watch had stopped. So I'm not sure, but I would imagine that a watch that's not working is probably muksa on Shabbos. But he had put it on when it was still working. So here he has a case. He has muksa on his wrist that he put on the mask of the hefker. So this is where it depends on the shayla. So assuming that you can't continue carrying if the girl is right, so then you would have to probably get it off in outside somehow. But just when I was thinking these things don't usually come up, every so often they do.
You can use matchsticks to pick your teeth, right? You can use it.
Right. Right. So I assume.
Therefore, why can you not use them?
You mean the first scrub, the Grand Mirror Day?
Yeah, the first scrub.
So I think, a little bit, not everything is explicit in the scrub, but I think the point is like this, that if something has a common use for tzorach of hefker, that's not klishal mafleser either. If it's used both for isser and for hefker. Something is a klishal mafleser only, as I've heard him point out, when it's rove mafleser. I mean, primarily, it's generally used for isser. So we're talking about a case. In the Kanaan, I don't know what the din would be if you knew for sure you were going to need it later with Tzorach Kufa. It's a different discussion. Maybe that's also included in the Heather with Tzorach Kufa. Probably is. If you had to move in a certain way so that later you can move with Tzorach Kufa. I think that is included. 100% sure. But we're talking about a case where you don't expect to use it later. But by Klishal Mach the Heather, since the type of thing that's useful by its nature on Shabbos, so we consider that tiltul. We don't consider that tiltul shalolot tzarach klal. A klisha mach lizer, which only you could come up with a scenario that you might find use for it. It's not impossible, but it's a rare scenario to begin with, and you have no reason to expect that will come up. And primarily, what is used for this, or we consider that tiltul shalolot tzarach klal. So that's what Chazal drew the line. So just it's getting a little late. Just to conclude with a few examples that the place can talk about in which this issue may be relevant. It says in some Rishon Machdimel, the whole machlokes between the Bahag and the Ramban about whether or not halachas neiros constitutes a kabbalah shabbos. People are familiar with this, that women when they light candles generally consider for them, the minhag is to consider for them a kabbalah shabbos. It's based on the shittas of Bahag. The Bahag holds that whenever anyone lights neiros shabbos, that's considered kabbalah shabbos. We don't fully accept the Bahag. But it says in Shulchan Aruch that, according to the Bahag, once you light candles, then it's Shabbos. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, V'alpi zeh no'avos k'sas noshim sh'achar sh'barchu v'hidliku ha'neiros mashlichus l'aretz ha'psilos sh'vyodan sh'hidliku ba v'ein mechaber chufa. But based on this, some women have the practice that as soon as they make the bracha and light the neiros, they drop the match and they don't put it out. Just put it down, let it fall to the ground, and they don't put it out directly. So the Achronim are medayik in this. Then not only do they not put it out directly, he says they drop it. Meaning that they don't carry it and put it down somewhere else. They drop it where they are. Why? Because now it's muksa. Once they're mekabel Shabbos, it's muksa. Because here you have a case of muksa that's in your hand in the beginning of Shabbos. Now I think my impression is that that's not the common practice of Manazeh, or at least we do a thorough survey. But some Achronim say, some people may have this practice, but the Rosh Hashulchan already says that the reason why we don't have this practice is because the Machaber held that you made the bracha before you bench left. Before you lit the candles. Our practice generally is to follow the Rishon of the Ramah quotes, that we light the candles and make the bracha. So I think what the Akan practice is that the women light the candles, put out the match, and then make the bracha. If they made the bracha before, they would have the same shayla. I think some Achronim say you should still keep this practice, but that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So Shulchan Aruch seems to be assuming the Pashkus, the Halacha, against the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham might say it's La Dafka, but the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is that, at least when it comes to Muksa Mamish, where you didn't have a special Heter to pick up in the first place, I mean, you had Heter, and that was before Shabbos, but you didn't have a Heter from the perspective of Hilchos Shabbos. There was never a Heter that candle is on Shabbos, so then you would have to put it down as soon as you realize you have books in your hands, or in this case, as soon as it becomes Shabbos. And finally, there's an interesting discussion when it comes to peels or pits of fruits or nuts that are muksa. Not all peels or pits are muksa, but peels of, say, nutshells, shells of walnuts, which which most certainly are mitzvah, mean anything, as far as I can tell. If you add a peel or a pit of a fruit that is not edible, and it's not edible for animals either, you wouldn't feed it for animals, or at least animals that are in the vicinity. In fact, there's some animal in Africa that might, this is not relevant. Anything that's not edible for people or for the neighborhood dogs and cats is mitzvah shots. So what do? When you peel your fruit, you crack open your nuts, you have pits, and you have it in your hand now, and you just peeled it, the fruit you ate, and now you have the peels or the shells in your hand. So what are you supposed to do with them? Eggshells. If you happen to have them in the hand, why are you taking them off? What are you supposed to do with them now? They're mitzvah. So in Shulchan Aruch, the case isn't discussed explicitly, but the Rambam has this case. It's a machlokas Rishon how to read a certain Gemara and Shabbat and Daf Kuf Mem Gimel. The way the Rambam reads it, it's talking about this. And the Rambam says, in the middle of the Rambam, Perek Chavav, Halacha Dezayin, Lechol Shabbos, that kol ha-klipim va-gar'inim har'uyim l'machol b'hemem tatlum, that any peels or pits that are fit for animal consumption you can handle, v'she'enem r'uyim ochol sa'okel v'zolkom l'achol r'av asur tatlum. And, but those that are not fit for animal consumption, finish eating the food, and then you just throw it. You throw it behind you, you dump it, you let it go, and you can't carry them anymore, you can't handle them anymore. That's what it says in the Rambam. And the point of throwing it behind, the point of throwing behind you is probably not necessarily, most likely not applicable in our contemporary situations for a reason we're not getting into now. But the point is you have to drop them right away. That's what says the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch Rav passes like this, and he says, now you want to take them out of your mouth, your hand. Mm-hmm. You have to spit them out and leave them there. That's the Shulchan Aruch Rav passes. Because even though the tefillah, the tefillah was beheter, the tefillah tilter was beheter, the Rambam seems to think, now it's moksa, you have to drop it. It's not so clear that everyone accepts this Rambam. And lahalacha, there's a chidushi around that implies that once in your hand, you can put it down, you can keep holding it and keep handling it until the first time you put it down. And some Achronim seem to assume like that. That this is because this is a case of muksa, yes, but muksa where you had a distinct heter to use it before Shabbos. Not before Shabbos, sorry, distinct heter to carry it on Shabbos. Because at the beginning, initially it was part of the nut, a part of the fruit, and it was mutter to handle it. And now, in the middle of handling it, it turned into muksa. So according to many Achronim, based on the discussion we had before, it is permissible to keep handling it, if you accept the broad interpretation in our Chaim, or certainly if you accept the Mug in Avram, and that's, it seems to be a dispute in the Ephraim.